Good evening. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here at Global Patriot Radio, where you can find us every day at blogtalkradio.com. Absolutely. And anywho, it is Wednesday, June 21st, 2023. So happy Wednesday and happy summer solstice day for 2023. That means the Earth is tilting on its axis, and it's the most sunlight we will have all year. This is the longest day, sun-wise, or daylight-wise, in the Northern Hemisphere. True story. I guess it varies in some places, like a day or two or whatever, but basically this is the summer solstice, so certainly anyone in the United States, this is the longest day of daylight that you will have. Also the shortest night. Duh. So, you know, all that said, happy summer solstice day. Just a great time for summer sports, especially if you're into the water sports like I am with paddleboarding and leading tours for paddleboarders and kayakers. We see longer days of bioluminescence coming up because the days are actually going to get shorter from here on out. The bioluminescence is just really going well. We're at a point now where it doesn't matter if it rains. We're going to have it. We're going to have it until we have a really large freshwater dump, along with colder water, colder weather. That's not going to happen for a while here. So be that as it may, happy summer solstice day. Happy summer. It's officially summer now, although in a lot of places it's already feeling like it's been feeling like it for a few weeks, if not months. So anyway, as I said, we're here every day, starting Mondays with the Vito Esposito Show with Vito and Big Al. Tuesdays, Vito or Al takes it. Wednesdays, of course, me, Hank Jones with Hank Jones Poly Sports. Thursdays, when I'm able, I'm doing Hankerings. That's my shorter version with like a single issue. I was going to do a show last week, paddle schedule permitting. It has to be the new caveat because if the paddle schedule permits, I do it. But otherwise, if I've got something going on, especially if I have an earlier paddle or something like that, I tend not to be able to do the show. Or let's put it this way, I tend not to be able to do it in a way that's worthwhile for anyone to come and listen. So Fridays, Vito is back in with Conservative Casual Friday, and he's got another, gosh, I get his tweets, and I draw a blank because I confuse it with Joe Gibson's show. Joe Gibson's show is Restoring Our Republic, Understanding the Times in Which We Live Today. Vito's is something like Taking Back Our Republic. Oh, no, I know what it is. It's Take No Prisoners. That's it. So Conservative Casual Friday with Vito, Take No Prisoners. That's at noon on Fridays. All the others are 6 p.m. Eastern, with the exception if I do a hankering, so I usually do it in the afternoon. Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern time, Minister Usama Dakduk and the Beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, when available, Eric comes in with the Cross and Crescent discussion, also known as Real Interfaith Dialogue. That's at 3 p.m. Eastern. I'm hanging out in Central Florida, the Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost. Had a couple launches. I haven't had anything while I'm out paddling, but we've had some launches to watch, so that's always fun. Fed the little Aussie, the mini Aussie. She's doing well. Although we get summer storms, she's not liking those too much. My very hardworking and beautiful wife is working over at Acoustic Hankland, and she is hard at work, I got to say. She's always been a hard worker, and I hate to say that I'm lazy. I'm not lazy, but I don't have her work ethic. I mean, if I did, by gosh, I'd do the show every day. Let's get to today's first internet laughy. This is from the It's Funny, But It's Not Ha-Ha Funny department. This retweet by a guy named Chris Coulter, he retweeted a Stephen King tweet where somebody was talking about why do we really care about trans this or gay that and the LGBT and why are people getting mad at President Biden? And he retweeted something Stephen King tweeted, which said, I don't care if at Joe Biden hosts a child orgy at the White House. He still got my vote. Yeah, see what I mean by it's funny, but it's not ha-ha funny? So there are several ways to interact with us here at the show. You can come in live. I discovered that you do not even have to have a login. You can just come into blogtalkradio.com, search the live button, and click down on us. It'll show you chatters down below on the right, lower right. You can just click on Global Patriot Radio, and that brings you to whatever show we got going. It's best to follow the show, though, or follow the network. That way you get emails. You can also come into the chat room, as Duck Northwest Media is currently doing. You can chat with people, other listeners, chat with me. You can also call in, 319-527-6706. My big sister, plus a couple others, are in there right now. And you can listen along. Just so you know, when I talk about hitting the one, if you want to talk, if I recognize the number, that's a no-brainer. If it's a 111 number where I know it's a Skype, I'm probably going to take it. If it's a number I don't recognize, I'm going to take it, but I'm going to be real tough in leeway. I just got to be careful with that. We have those people that think it's cool to swear on the Internet. I don't know why. It's not like you're on network television. You're on the Internet. I mean, you can type it in all you want, you know. I mean, it's whatever. The second Internet Laffy, according to Greta Thunberg, we should all be gone. 5 years ago today, she tweeted that top climate scientists said we will be gone in 5 years. Well, I'll tell you what, if anything east of the prime meridian is gone by now, let me know. You find out, but don't think so. Guess that mindless crap that those people tweet. Last week's obits, ones I deem significant. Two-time Oscar winner, British actress Glenda Jackson, passed away at the age of 87. She was an acting triple crown winner. She won Oscar, Emmy, and a Tony. Now, her two Oscars for Best Actress were awarded for her work in 1970's Women in Love and 1973's A Touch of Class. Paxton Whitehead, British actor, age 85, complications from a fall. While he had numerous roles over the years, this, in my opinion, was his best, or at least my favorite. So let's give it a quick listen. He's playing the part of Dr. Barbet in Back to School, the Rodney Dangerfield movie, where Rodney is a sort of a self-made businessman, and he's going back to college with his son. So here, let's listen in.
All right, settle down, people. We've got a lot to cover, and time is short. There are two kinds of people in business today, the quick and the dead. So rather than waste your time this semester with a lot of useless theories, we're going to jump right in with both feet and create a fictional company from the ground up. We'll construct our physical plant. We'll set up an efficient administrative and executive structure. Then we'll manufacture our product and market it. I think you'll find it very interesting and a lot of fun. So let's start by looking at construction costs of our new factory.
What's the product?
That is immaterial for the purposes of our discussion here, but if it makes you happy, let's say we're making tape recorders.
Tape recorders? Are you kidding? The Japs will kill us on a labor course.
Okay, fine. Then let's just say they're widgets.
What's a widget?
It's a fictional product. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Tell that to the bank, you know.
Easy, take it easy. It's the first day, you know.
On the board, you will see a cost analysis for construction of a 30,000 square foot facility, which will encompass both factory and office space, and is fully serviced by all utilities, a railroad spur line, and a four-bay shipping dock.
Hold on, why build? Hey, you're better off leasing at $1.25, $1.50 a square foot. Take your down payment and put it into CDs, or something else you can roll over every couple of months.
Thank you, Mr. Mellon, but we'll be concentrating on finance a little later in the term. For the time being, let's just concentrate on the construction figures, shall we? You will see the final bottom line requires the factoring in of not just the material and construction costs, but also the architect's fees, and the costs of land servicing.
Oh, you left out a bunch of stuff.
Oh, really? Like what, for instance?
Well, first of all, you're going to have to grease the local politicians for the sudden zoning problems that always come up. Then there's the kickbacks to the carpenters. And if you plan on using any cement in this building, I'm sure the teams would like to have a little chat with you. And that'll cost you. Oh, and don't forget a little something for the building inspectors. Then there's a long-term cost, such as waste disposal. I don't know if you're familiar with who runs that business, but I assure you it's not the Boy Scouts.
That'll be quite enough, Mr. Mellon. Maybe bribes and kickbacks and mafia payoffs are how you do business. But they are not part of the legitimate business world. And they're certainly not part of anything I'm teaching in this class. Do I make myself clear?
Sorry, just trying to help, that's all.
Now, notwithstanding Mr. Mellon's input, the next question for us is where to build our factory.
How about fantasy land?
Yes, that was Paxton Whitehead, Back to School. Great, great flick. Hilarious Rodney Dangerfield flick. And he played the uppity, uptight professor of business. I don't know what you call it. He's a British dude. And he was just kind of one of those self-important guys. Anyway, on that same day that we lost him, we lost Watergate figure, whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, who passed away from pancreatic cancer at age 92. Ellsberg released the Pentagon Papers to the New York Times. That was that sort of expose of America's not hidden involvement in Vietnam, but the fact that there was more involvement, more stuff going on. It wasn't hidden that we were involved, but what was hidden was the extent. They published it. The Times published it in 71. Ellsberg was later discredited by Nixon aides during the Watergate scandal. Remember that if you watch Watergate stuff back then, they always talk about Daniel Ellsberg, psychiatrist. Drummer and actress Teresa Taylor passed away, age 60, from lung disease. She was the drummer for the Butthole Surfers. Yeah, there's really a group called that. She also appeared in the films Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Barbecue Movie, and Slacker. Former Chicago Cub setup reliever George Frazier passed away at age 68. Yeah, he was with the Cubs in the 84 season. Remember, that was their first playoff appearance in 39 years. Got to the Cubs as part of the trade that actually brought that year's Cy Young Award winner, Rick Sutcliffe. Then he later won a World Series with the Twins in 1987. As a member of the 1981 Yankees, which they lost to the Dodgers, Frazier tied the record for most World Series losses in a single series, credited with three of the losses in that series. Speaking of the Dodgers, their dignity died last Saturday when they hosted, as part of their Pride Night, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, the LGBTQ plus group that uses the Catholic Church as the butt of its, for lack of a better word, humor. Very sparse audience. People didn't show up for it, which is awesome. But yeah, the Dodgers basically, not only did they do that, indulge that, but people didn't show up. I mean, they were too stupid to realize people wouldn't show up. Now, finally, word came today, the death of former University of Michigan running back Mr. Simpson. No, not Homer Simpson. His name, actual name was Mr. Simpson. Just 36 years old. He played sparingly there for two seasons, transferred to his hometown school, University of Cincinnati, for his last two seasons. He found no success there either, and reportedly had faced a hard time post-college. No cause was released, but he was just 36. Very sad. I mean, I remember when he was there, and it was kind of like, you know, he kind of laughing at the guy's name and everything, but, you know, you don't want to see, you know, people dying too soon. It's not. Wow. Hey, don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center for messaging and answering services for your medical clinic, hospital clinic, large service company, small service company, government agencies, believe it or not. Now, There's also that phenomena of those offices that never went back after COVID, or they have stayed remote or whatever. You're a prime candidate for their services because you don't have someone there answering your phones. So you know what? They can handle it for you, act as your front line, and then go from there. Tailor it to whatever your needs happen to be. They also allow remote staff. So if you like working remotely, they can bring you on board there. So if you're interested in their services or you're looking for employment and like the idea of remote work, or you can work in their office if you're local. But anyway, give them a call, 800-555-3738, or just visit them on the internet, alliancecommunications.com. Another internet laughy, a nice tweet from Ashley Munoz. This is, you know, you follow people on Twitter and then you see stuff that they, you know, I don't follow her. I just happen to see it. She says, "I'm not an expert in Democrat politics, so maybe some of y'all can help me out. Why did the left obsess over President Trump's tax returns but want to know absolutely nothing about President Biden's financial dealings with China, Ukraine, or Burisma? It just doesn't make sense." Ain't that the truth? So our quickies, Hunter Biden has reached a plea deal. Of course he has. But how would we know, given that mainstream media has hardly covered it at all? Also, the Titan submersible, which ceased contact on its way to view the Titanic, has less than 24 hours of air. Additionally, more vessels have joined the search, and there have been pinging or knocking noises that have been detected. It's been going on since Sunday. It's a submersible. There's already stuff on the news about how they, you know, people knew it wasn't a safe thing to do. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they always come back with it. Let's get to our news notes and whatnot. In a story reminiscent of 1930s and 40s Nazi Germany, German officials say right-wing extremism is the biggest threat to democracy in that country. Sound familiar? It should. Because it's happening right here in the United States of America. Here's the story from the Daily Sabah news site. It's real quick, but basically, Germany's Interior Minister Nancy Faeser said they consider far-right extremism to be the biggest threat to democracy in the country. Right-wing extremism remains a continuing challenge as it is the greatest extremist threat to the basic democratic order, Faeser said as she presented an annual report on extremism in Germany to reporters in Berlin. In 2022, the number of crimes with a right-wing extremist background rose by 3.8 to around 21,000. In addition, the potential right-wing extremists willing to use violence has risen again by 500 to over 14,000. How do they know that? "We must never underestimate the deadly danger of right-wing extremism and right-wing terrorism," she said. The report by the Federal Office for Protecting the Constitution said the number of people assigned to the right-wing extremist spectrum rose 14.5% to 38,800 compared to the previous year. One of the reasons for the sharp increase is that the agency now includes members of the far-right party Alternative for Germany. It is being observed as a suspected case. Sound familiar? Germany has been rocked by a series of deadly far-right killings in recent years. Among them is the murder of a regional politician by a suspected neo-Nazi, an attack on a synagogue in the East German city of Halle, the fatal shooting of 9 people with migrant backgrounds in the South German city of Hanau. An attack on a synagogue, and they don't even think to say, hey, you know, maybe, just maybe. Yeah, they're not about to say that. Now that Germany has become Eurabia. Colorado Representative Lauren Boebert's filing of a privileged motion to file impeachment charges against Dopey Joe has met some resistance from others in the party. Here's more from Fox News' website. Basically, yeah, so GOP lawmakers tell Fox News Digital they disapproved of Lauren Boebert skirting the regular committee process. Several House Republicans said Wednesday they were frustrated with Representative Lauren Boebert's attempt to bypass the committee process to push for an immediate vote to impeach President Biden. Boebert, representative, a Republican from Colorado, filed a privileged resolution on the House floor Tuesday evening aimed at impeaching Biden over the border crisis, and it appeared to catch members of her own party off guard. A privileged resolution allows lawmakers to force a vote on the House floor without going through the committee, a move that some Republicans seem to oppose. House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer of Kentucky would not say if he would support Boebert's resolution, but suggested he was unhappy about how her resolution skirted his committee despite its month-long investigation into corruption accusations against the Biden family. I don't like how she presented it by bypassing the committee process, especially when the investigation in the Oversight Committee, which she is on, is producing new information almost daily, Comer told Fox News Digital. I feel like we've got some work to do on the Oversight Committee before we issue a report. Then once we issue a report, depending on what's in the report, then the Judiciary Committee would be the committee that would then have hearings on any potential wrongdoing and potential impeachment, he said. So I wish she had gone about it a different way. Don Bacon of Nebraska said, I think the previous majority cheapened impeachment. I think it was politicized. This shouldn't be playground games. This should be serious. Should go through the Judiciary Committee or Oversight Committee. And if there are real facts for impeachment, then you go there. But doing this is wrong, he said, agreeing with Comer. Kelly Armstrong of North Dakota said, I would prefer regular order. I think regular order has worked for us. No, it hasn't. I think we fought really hard to get rank-and-file members to have committee access and all of those things. That was a big part of the 15-vote speaker fight, so I think we should use it. Bacon said he would vote with Democrats to kill the resolution when it comes up, something that could happen Wednesday. So did Representative Ryan Zinke, Republican in Vermont, who previously served as President Trump's Interior Secretary and recalled the impeachment process Democrats underwent during that administration. He said, I loathe how they treated President Trump. If you want to go through impeachment, it should go through judiciary. They should look at all the evidence and have a case that is clear. I think it should be pursued. I think it should be done, absolutely. So the American people can see it all transparent. I think Jim Jordan and that committee of jurisdiction is the right place. But doing a privilege motion off the floor is, to me, theater and smacks of self-service and not regular service. Boebert was not at the Wednesday morning regular party-wide meeting. House Majority Whip Tom Emmer was noncommittal when asked about her move, stating people have a right to do what they want to do. With the thinly divided House chamber, Democrats need just a handful of Republicans to vote with them to table Boebert's motion. Evidently, Kevin McCarthy, Speaker McCarthy, is also against it. He has said doing this, you know, after the way Adam Schiff did his stuff, et cetera. I can't say I don't disagree with a couple of those points. Comer and the House Oversight Committee are still working through some of the issues with the corruption by the Biden family and the Dopey Nostra as a whole. Until they complete that work, jumping to impeachment may not be the right answer. As well, going after Adam Schiff for brains, followed by what appears to be a quick impeachment, is a bit hypocritical. I agree. However, holding off on any action because of wanting to retain the House, as some said, that's bad form. We get elected, presumably, to do a job, which is helping to set policy and uphold the Constitution of the United States. To put forth the idea that they hold off because the GOP might lose the majority, frankly, it's just as bad as the Dems who focus solely on punishing and ousting Republicans, whether it's from Congress or the White House or wherever. So, yeah, I think simply filing like that the way she did is kind of stupid. But, again, holding off under the guise of, well, we want to retain the majority and this looks bad. Well, wait a second. You get elected essentially to do the right thing. So if you do the right thing, people will support that. But whether they support it or not, the primary obligation is to do what's right by the Constitution and the American people, not do what you think will keep the majority. You know, I mean, yes, there is a process and they should follow it, and I wish they would, but some of the reasons, the reason of we need to keep our majority, that's a crappy reason not to file something. If something bad, something wrong has taken place. Meanwhile, Virgin Island non-voting congressional delegate Stacey Plaskett was very quickly let off the hook by mainstream media after she said President Trump needs to be shot, and she corrected herself to say stopped. It was during an interview last Sunday on MSDNC. She was pontificating, if one could call it that, about President Trump having classified documents and nuclear codes and then claiming he could share it. Yeah, meanwhile, no word on who Dopey Joe has been sharing with. The amazing thing with this is that mainstream media covered for her so quickly. Trust me, if she had said this about Dopey Joe, she'd already be in the January 6th gulag. That or she'd have been Arkansided. Welcome Joe Gibson to the chat room. Joe's got his show, Restoring Our Republic, Understanding the Times in Which We Live Today. He's also a candidate for Congress from North Carolina. I think it's from Congress. It might be State House. I remember he was on before and talked about it, but I'll have him on more again as the election approaches. Here's some great news. Dopey Joe's White House aides admit they don't know what his odd sayings mean. Yeah, they ain't alone, by the way. According to Fox News, Axios reported on a bizarre comment that Dopey Joe made at the conclusion of a gun control speech. Trust me, the rest of the speech probably wasn't any better. Well, basically, he was given a speech on gun control, and they were talking about his wacky phrases. They said his last speech thing where he said, God save the Queen. White House principal deputy press secretary told reporters he was commenting to someone in the crowd. Huh? Says Biden aides are often confused by his quirky aphorisms. Axios concluded that the president's weird phrases were, quote, Biden being Biden. Yeah, gun control speech in Connecticut, and he ended the speech with the words, God save the Queen. After he said, he had already noted that he would not be able to shake hands with attendees because a storm was approaching. Uttered another phrase he once used toward a student who questioned him about his fourth place standing in the 2020 Iowa caucuses. And he said, is that the truth? Now, do not make a lie. As that scene in the John Wayne movie, don't make me a dog-faced lying pony soldier. Supposedly this time about the incoming storm. Then Axios said, as a proud Irishman whose ancestors probably weren't fans of the crown, Biden may use the phrase more as sarcasm. What? Then they cited former and current Biden aides who said they, quote, still aren't sure, unquote, what he meant by the phrase. Of course, a lot of people have expressed concern over his age. It's not his age, people. Although Hillary Clinton told the Financial Times that it was back a month or so ago. She said, his age is an issue and people have every right to consider it. But, you know, he has this great saying, and I think he's right. Don't judge him for running against the Almighty, but against the alternative. I am of the camp that I think he's determined to run. He has a good record that 3 years ago, people would not have predicted would have gotten done. What? Good God. By the way, in in Dopey Joe's defense, in his defense, John Fetterman actually had this to say. I'm going to keep using that, just as I'm going to keep talking about the Biden wipeout at the Air Force Academy graduation speech. I'm going to play tribute to that one right here. Yeah, that's him wiping out every time he's walking up the Air Force One steps or down the steps or leaving the podium. Dan Bongino said the one thing I think very, very well when he said, look, you're told several times by Secret Service where to walk, where not to walk, who to approach, who not to approach. He was going the wrong way, clear and simple. He was getting ready to give an airball handshake, I'm sure. He's totally lost it. And it's not funny. Like I said, it's not funny. Sort of like I said about Bernie Sanders when he got just completely maniacal and his mad scientist head was in full bloom and people were laughing about it. It's not funny. I mean, when it's that somebody in government like that, it's scary, number one. But number two, you know, why is the person kept there? You know, why don't voters, number one, but two, why doesn't family step in? Newsmax host Wendy Bell had an excellent tweet the other day. Said somebody asked her to put up all the lies that we've been told by government recently, and she came up with a pretty good one. She said she closed her weekend show with a list of lies that they have told us. It took her less than 10 minutes. Number one, this is what they've told us, that it was an insurrection, that ivermectin isn't safe or effective, that it was the safest, most secure election, that there was a water main break that stopped the count, that Donald Trump was a Russian asset, that COVID came from a wet market, the vaccine would keep you from getting sick. A man can become a woman. Schools aren't teaching CRT. The voting machines weren't connected to the internet. Masks worked. The Inflation Reduction Act cuts government spending. The Proud Boys and Oath Keepers are domestic terrorists. That the laptop was Russian disinformation. Protests were mostly peaceful. There weren't 2,000 mules. Joe Biden isn't corrupt. Climate change is real. Bill Gates cares about your health. George Soros is a philanthropist. Black Lives Matter actually cares about black lives. Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. Children are not being trafficked. You can keep your doctor. Benghazi was about a video. Everything in East Palestine, Ohio is safe. We can trust the science. John Fetterman is competent. America is racist. The border is closed. The FBI is nonpartisan. Guns are what kills people, not people. It totally makes sense to eat bugs. Hillary's BlackBerry smashed itself. Bill Clinton never had sex with that woman, those women. Joe Biden doesn't have dementia. There were weapons of mass destruction. Gas stoves cause asthma. Fact checkers stop misinformation. Fauci didn't fund gain-of-function research. Russia blew up its own pipeline. Abortion is health care. There were no bio labs. Donald Trump lost. Joe Biden got 81 million votes. And the world doesn't have a disgusting pedophilia problem. Look at all the lies that we've been told. And she's right. They are all lies. Amazing, isn't it? Absolutely amazing. It's a good tweet, though. Well, for those who were afraid that Sam Bankman-Fried might skate on his crypto fraud scheme, here is partial vindication for you. He's not going to skate, maybe, at least not yet. But feds quietly dropped charges against Democrat donor Sam Bankman-Fried in multi-billion dollar FTX scam. Company went bankrupt last year, lost billions, wrecked the lives of thousands of crypto investors. In January, he pleaded not guilty to all eight counts related to the sudden collapse of his crypto Ponzi scheme. On Tuesday, he pleaded not guilty in New York to eight charges related to the collapse of FTC and hedge fund Alameda Research. Those charges included conspiracy to commit wire fraud and securities fraud, individual charges of securities fraud and wire fraud, money laundering, conspiracy to avoid campaign finance regulations. The FTX attorney testified that the FTX co-founder used a secret backdoor to launder money to Alameda Research, a sister company. His ex-girlfriend, Caroline Ellis, admitted she and Bankman-Fried conspired to mislead FTX investors and customers. However, last Thursday, federal prosecutors announced they would drop several charges. The offer to sever five of the 13 charges followed a ruling earlier this week in the Bahamas that allows him to challenge the additional charges. A prosecutor said during a hearing Thursday it was uncertain when the Bahamas would decide whether to consent to the new charges, which included bank fraud and an allegation Frank Bankman-Fried bribed the Chinese. Prosecutors did not provide any explanation for the sudden withdrawal of the charges. Charges had accused him of operating an unregistered securities exchange, facilitating illegal transactions, and failing to comply with KYC and AML requirements. One person said, he's going to walk. Just watch. Ian Miles Chung is a conservative commentator, and he says he's going to walk. If he does, we better be pissed. James Comer, chair of the House Oversight Committee, says we are talking about $20 to $30 million to the Bidens. Evidence, 20 to 30. He expects that evidence will reveal that. After appearing on Fox Business, he says, we have more bank records coming in, but we're going to exceed $10 million this week, but I think we get up to 20 to 30. He further noted, it's becoming clear that the Bidens potentially engaged in bribery, influence peddling, and money laundering. So this is going to be hard for Biden to explain. This is not going to go away, and I think eventually the mainstream media is going to start asking the real questions. Who cares what the mainstream media asks? He said, they know there's something wrong here. They know all the allegations have merit because of where Joe Biden was, because of what we've seen on tape before, what we saw with Joe Biden bragging about firing the prosecutor. They know that his family created these shell companies. They know his family was money laundering. They were profiting off Joe Biden's influence. The media knows that. They're just not covering it. Again, it's not media's job. I mean, yes, media doesn't make things easy, but it's not media's job to do the investigating or prosecuting or impeaching. It doesn't matter what media does or what media says about it. It simply doesn't. It's about doing the right thing, as Joe Biden has not done the right thing. Joseph Gibson said in the chat room, obey the Constitution. It's as simple as that. Media's got nothing to do with it. So somebody asked him, Dopey Joe, why did the Ukraine FBI informant refer to you as the big guy? He said, why'd you ask such a dumb question? Yeah, that's our president. This story is because it's about transgenders. Why not? Gavin Newsom did an interview where he went off on Ron DeSantis. I don't know what that's about, the feud between them. I really don't. He claimed Republican Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida was among those who weaponized the issue of men competing in women's sports. He says, I think the trans issue has come on as a more divisive issue in the context, particularly of sports, where it's also been weaponized, and issues around pronouns. He says, I remember the first time I was on Zoom, and all of a sudden I saw these different pronouns, and that even took me. I was like, what's this? I didn't fully understand that. I think a combination of those factors, the weaponization of grievance and dehumanization that I see, politicians that are exploiting this, like Ron DeSantis notably, but not unique to DeSantis, have also exacerbated this. Really? You know, the fact people think this is about politics, those people are morons. The people who think it's about equality are morons. People who think it's about diversity, equity, inclusivity, fairness, etc. Morons. Yes, they suffer from a mental disease. Anyone who thinks it's okay, Title IX, and touting equitability and access for women, and then spout off on this, are morons. Enough said. Okay, this next thing comes from a Harvard poll, believe it or not. It's a story on Breitbart. Harvard poll, most voters say Trump indictment is election interference, believe he'll be acquitted. Majorities of registered voters believe that special counsel Jack Smith's indictment of former President Donald Trump is politically motivated and election interference, according to a Harvard-Harris poll. 37-count indictment, blah, blah, blah. Of the registered voter respondents, 55% believe that the indictment is politically motivated versus the 45 who find it valid. 56% categorize the indictment as interference by the Department of Justice in the 2024 elections. Only 44% see it as the fair application of the law. Moreover, it says the majority of respondents, 57%, believe the 45th president will be acquitted on the charges, the vast majority of which fall under the Espionage Act of 1917. The poll also asked voters about President Joe Biden's documents case. There is no case, by the way, where classified materials from his time as vice president have been located at his personal residence and the Penn Biden Center in Washington, D.C., as well as Hillary Clinton's email scandal. Majority, 65%, believe Biden mishandled classified material. 72% think Clinton did. 69% say she obstructed justice by acid washing her emails. Polling outfit asks, do you think indicting a former president for taking classified documents after leaving office, something done by Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, and other senior officials, is a fair application of justice or selective prosecution? 53% said it's selective prosecution. 47% think the law is being applied evenly. Want to know what I have to say about those 47%? They're morons. Literally, they're morons. How do they think this is being applied evenly? I just don't. He holds up, by the way, a 6-point advantage over Dopey Joe in a hypothetical general election matchup. Wow. See, who'd have thought people couldn't see through the facade being perpetrated by the La Dopey Nostra orchestrated by Don Obama, a.k.a. Boss Barack, along with Big Mike, of course. Actually, maybe she belongs. belongs in the previous story. Speaking of Barack, here's an awesome commentary from Zachary Faria at Washington Examiner. Man, does this guy knock it out of the park. He absolutely nails it. He says, Obama wants to keep racial resentment going. One thing that is lost in the cultural flights and the rhetoric that has divided the country is that former President Barack Obama is one of the biggest culprits behind those divisions, especially when it comes to race. Obama this week took several shots at Senator Tim Scott, saying that people, quote, are rightly skeptical of a Republican who planned for how do we address crippling generational poverty that is a consequence of hundreds of years of racism in this society, unquote. And then we can't just, quote, pretend as if everything's equal and fair, unquote. Along with that, Obama also said that the GOP has embraced resentment and anger. Yet racial resentment has been Obama's whole shtick. Obama fanned the flames of racial division when the Black Lives Matter movement popped up in 2015. He said that the death of Michael Brown, who had assaulted Officer Darren Wilson and attempted to grab Wilson's gun during a confrontation Brown initiated, was proof of a, quote, broken and racially biased system, unquote. He also claimed that millions of Americans were racist who were spooked by his election in 2008. Obama's message now is that black people cannot have any success in America without some plan handed down by the government. It's the same message you can find now being pushed in schools to children in the form of critical race theory. Obama wants black people to think that those same millions of racist people who hated him will stand in their way at every turn, and that the criminal justice system itself is racist because a criminal was shot by a police officer after attacking that officer. Obama's racial fear-mongering should be contradicted by his own political existence. The man who served as president of the United States for 8 years wants you to think that millions of racists and a racist system are holding black people down. Tim Scott's message of cotton to Congress in one lifetime very explicitly rejects that view. And Obama cannot stand for that. Obama and racial grifters want black people to believe they cannot succeed on their own, which you can use to draw a direct line to Black Lives Matter and the anti-racism equity movement now. Obama has mostly succeeded in his goal of dividing Americans along racial lines. Around 70% of white people and 60% of black people viewed race relations as good from 2001 up to 2013. In 2015, that number tanked to 51% of white people and 45% of black people, and it has declined further since then. Obama allowed Black Lives Matter and its fictional narrative about racist police shootings to become the dominant narrative. The decline in the perception of race relations over the past decade rests on his shoulders. Obama and the Democrat Party want racial grift to continue, which is why he chose to single out Scott. The accusations of resentment and anger can apply to Obama as equally as they can to someone such as former President Donald Trump. The toxic political state of the country can be traced directly to Obama's presidency, and he is determined to help activists keep that toxicity going. See what I mean when I said brilliant? Awesome? Because it was. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin is making a little noise, what with being behind in his reelection campaign, and now talking about a third-party bid for the White House. Here's a story. Appeared on Yahoo. It first appeared on Politico. Titled, Terrible Idea. Fellow Dems Try to Stop Manchin's Presidential Flirtation. Joe Manchin loves to keep his political options open. And now, as the West Virginia centrist flirts with a third-party campaign for president, his Democratic colleagues are taking him seriously enough to try to talk him out of it. Manchin is never one to quash a mystery surrounding his future, whether it's pursuing his old job as governor or how he'd vote in former President Donald Trump's first impeachment trial. Yet, even as many doubt he'll go through with a White House bid, Democrats also fear it could hand the GOP both the Senate and the White House if he does. Manchin's refusal to silence talk of a White House bid, potentially funded by centrist group No Labels, gives him leverage over party leaders. The more they need him to seek Senate reelection, the more attention he can get for his priorities. That's because Manchin is the only candidate with a prayer of keeping his Senate seat blue. How about that? And if Republicans win the presidency in 2024, they'd only need one Senate pickup to take control. So some fellow Democrats are letting Manchin know he'd be making a mistake. I have advised him against it. I think it would be a terrible idea, said John Hickenlooper of Colorado, recalling a conversation he had with Manchin. It would help Donald Trump. Trump derangement system to the or syndrome to the bitter end. Manchin's private reaction, as recalled by Hickenlooper, reflects his public indecision. He looked at me and nodded. Keeping an open mind is central to Manchin's political identity and his ability to achieve his goals. In this case, it may boost his hopes to fully enact his preferred energy permitting reforms, as well as increase his sway over the implementation of energy provisions in the party line Inflation Reduction Act. What's more, Manchin doesn't see annual labels run the same way most Democrats do. In an interview, he questioned the assumption that it would inevitably be a spoiler for Democrats. Then how did Perot get Bill Clinton elected? Manchin asked, referring to the 1992 Reform Party bid that siphoned votes for the GOP nominee. Duh. Everybody's getting so worked up and scared to death, and we're a year and a half away, he added. Is there any alternative? Is there anything that we can do to bring both the Democrat or Republican Party back to centrist policy? Filing deadline for West Virginia's Senate race is not until January, giving Manchin roughly 6 months' time to decide. In the meantime, he's opposing some of Joe Biden's nominees, voting to roll back some of the president's policies, and criticizing the administration as radical on energy. That track record could mean Manchin is steeling himself for one last Senate run in deep red West Virginia. Or it could also serve as a portfolio for a presidential candidate unaligned with either major party. Senator John Tester of Vermont, Montana, Democrat from Montana, conceded that you never know about Joe, but said it would be bad for the country if Joe didn't run for U.S. Senate. Manchin has irked many progressives by helping tug the Democratic agenda rightward. He blocked Neera Tanden's nomination to become Biden's budget director and slashed trillion-dollar party line legislation into what became the Inflation Reduction Law, which he named. Just last week, he voted against three Biden nominees. But in interviews with more than a dozen senators, a clear picture emerged. Democrats across the ideological spectrum say that despite Manchin's more conservative views on environment and social issues, he's their only shot in West Virginia. Senator Gary Peters of Michigan, who chairs the caucus's campaign arm, said Manchin is, quote, unquote, still thinking through a possible presidential campaign. I'm encouraging him to run for the Senate every opportunity I get, Peters added. Manchin won his Senate races by healthy margins in 2010 and 2012, then won by 3 points in 2018. If he runs again, he'll face his toughest race ever. Popular West Virginia Governor Jim Justice is running for the GOP nod to take him on, and some Republicans argue that Manchin might run for president to stay relevant and avoid a loss to his political rival. Allies say that's not the case. My gut tells me that that's not going to happen, and my gut tells me there's still a really good likelihood that Joe's going to run for re-election, and we need him, too, said Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia. If Governor Justice thinks he's going to sweep Joe Manchin aside, I know that Joe Manchin is like, are you kidding me? No way. Senator Richard Blumenthal said, I have trouble seeing Senator Manchin doing anything that would put Donald Trump back in the White House. I'm hardly original in thinking that a third-party candidate would have unpredictable and unknown consequences that certainly could be in favor of Donald Trump, Blumenthal added. So why not just take running for president off the table? Hickenlooper likened Manchin's decision to a patient's knee that twitches when tapped by a doctor. It's a reflex. I don't rule out anything. There's a tremendous concern about our country and the direction the country is going in. That's all. We're talking about whether it's going to hurt anybody if there's some kind of interest in trying to save the centrist moderate middle, Manchin said. Manchin is one of just four true moderates left in the Senate these days, along with Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Republican Susan Collins of Maine, and Kyrsten Sinema, independent from Arizona, who left the Democratic Party last year. yet Sinema hasn't openly called for a third-party presidential candidate. Murkowski, who along with Collins said she would support Manchin's Senate reelection, said he would leave a hole in the Senate if he left. As someone who dispatched a Trump-backed primary challenger last year while also trying to work with Biden, Murkowski also seems to understand Manchin's reasoning. Senator Manchin is a smart politician and a smart legislator and a smart person with all these options, she said. I think there is room for a candidate at the national level who is willing to bridge differences between what we have in our parties right now. That sounds at least a little like Manchin, and it's not hard to see where Manchin is coming from. He's a former governor of a once proud Democratic state that's turned red over the last two decades, voting for Trump twice by huge margins. He took tons of flats from Democrats and Republicans during the first 2 years of Biden's presidency. He likes blanches at the way the president's administration governs, and he's watched Justice switch party affiliation from Democrat to Republican, a move that Manchin so far has resisted. With that in mind, he's perfectly happy being part of the presidential conversation, for a while longer, at least. I'm in no hurry, Manchin said. You know, again, this is senators, congressmen, whatever, worrying about themselves. They're not doing or running on the basis of doing what's right or upholding the Constitution. It's about self-serving. Simple as that. Before we get to our break, a pre-break internet laffy from Babylon Bee. This is a good one. Hunter seen at courthouse trying to weigh crack on Lady Justice's scales. Another one. I'll do this pre-break rather than post. Internet. This is another internet laughing. Man caught drinking Bud Light insists he's not gay. Oh, gosh. You know, it's totally rational. It's a totally rational thought because Bud Light is, well, I don't get it. It's crappy beer anyway. Okay, we're going to take a break. Be back in a little over 4 minutes with George Harrison from his Living in the Material World album. This is Sue Me, Sue You Blues. the late, great George Harrison with Sue Me, Sue You Blues. That was when he was going through the lawsuit about My Sweet Lord, when the Chabans sued and won for saying his My Sweet Lord was a direct copy of the Chabans' He's So Fine. Great guitarist, very underrated. Coming to a close with all, with focusing on Beatles guitarists, by the way. Back to news, getting into some sports stuff. Bob Huggins is out as head coach for West Virginia basketball and has retired. He resigned after 16 seasons there. Last month, uttered a quote-unquote homophobic comment about Xavier University members on a Cincinnati radio show. This member Huggins used to be the coach at Cincinnati. He received a suspension for the first three games of the upcoming 2023-24 season. His contract was put on a year-to-year basis, and the base salary was reduced by $1 million. But it was last Friday's DUI charge, where he apparently registered a blood alcohol level of 0.210, that forced his resignation. And it's not his first go-round in that department, by the way. Here's more in the form of a social media post from his daughter, Jackie Huggins. She passionately defends her dad. She says, basically, okay, first of all, he was arrested on a DUI charge last Friday. The SUV was stopped in the middle of traffic in Pittsburgh with a shredded tire and the driver's side door open. Authorities said responding officers asked Huggins to move to the side but observed that he had trouble doing so. Upon further questioning, officers suspect he was intoxicated, asked him to exit the vehicle. He failed standard sobriety tests, taken into custody. Officers found a garbage bag with empty beer cans in the front of the vehicle and empty beer bottles in the trunk. It was later determined his blood alcohol content was twice the limit. She posted a lengthy post on Facebook targeting West Virginia President E. Gordon G. and the school's board and said her father was not an alcoholic. It says this, to Gordon G. and your board, be better and do better. Throwing stones at glass houses is also not how to represent such a great university. Treating someone like they don't matter after they have given their whole heart and soul to your university? You could have helped, but chose to turn your backs. Not only on him, on the guys, the staff, the boosters. Everyone. You're the classless ones, the cowards, the backstabbers, and most of all, hypocrites, her post read. Remember the $24 million practice facility that was not in any way funded by the university? The $17 million into your hospitals for cancer research? I can only pray you never make another mistake like you have in the past to be crucified for. Cue Ohio State. Enrollment down 30%, mountains of debt, and too much more to list. Do your job that you were assigned to do and bring West Virginia University back. Not that I need to touch any more on what happened, but I'm going to, she added, because the people above don't deserve the right to hide how it really happened and the kind of people they actually are. My dad is not an alcoholic. He drinks like 90% of us do and made a mistake that cost him his job, reputation, and his livelihood, which he didn't deserve. He told Gordon and his board that he would go to rehab for a 60-day stint to be able to stay for these guys, the guys who don't want to play for anyone else. That's how much he cares. He refused, not even considered. 100% no without a thought. Also, he was given 30 minutes to decide if he was being fired or retiring. But they want to preach this society of understanding and compassion. I've not passed the bar, but I'm pretty sure there are some stiff laws against this. Once a mountaineer, always a mountaineer, right? She then addressed the notion that her father had cans all over the car. Next, the beer cans all over the car. The cans were in bags and not all beer cans. There is a small group in Morgantown who knows my dad collects cans to recycle. Always has, always will. That's his thing. To act like he was driving around pounding beers as the media wants to portray is absolutely absurd. The society in this world we are living in doesn't always tell the truth. Media will tell you what they want you to believe or what they want you to know. That choice is, of course, yours to buy into or not. But just know it's not always factual. It's easy to judge a person from the outside looking in. She added that her father wanted nothing more than to win a championship at West Virginia and that he was a once-in-a-thousand-year coach. The lack of compassion shown in this situation absolutely disgusts me. The way it was handled disgusts me. If this is how they treat one of their own, then how will they treat anyone else? It was Bob Huggins' second such arrest. The other occurred in 2004 when he was at Cincinnati and was allowed to return to work. Well, sort of. He eventually got fired from Cincinnati. That 2004 incident was particularly noteworthy for the fact that he allegedly had open containers in the car and the interior reeked of and was covered in vomit. Nice. At least one PGA legend is speaking out on the PGA Live golf deal, and so is the U.S. Senate. First from Yahoo, Hall of Famer Tom Watson wrote a letter to PGA Commissioner Jay Monahan. According to the AP, he sent a letter to Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan and the Tour's board Monday to ask whether the new partnership with Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, something Monahan announced earlier this month before receiving widespread backlash, he asked if it was the only way to solve the Tour's financial hardship. The questions he posed, he said, were compounded by the hypocrisy in disregarding the moral issue. My loyalty to golf in this country live in the same place and have held equal and significant weight with me over my lifetime, Watson wrote. Please educate me and others in a way that allows loyalty to both and in a way that makes it easy to look 9/11 families in the eye and ourselves in the mirror. Watson specifically mentioned the hypocrisy regarding Monahan's relationship with groups like 9/11 Families United, which slammed the commissioner shortly after the merger was announced. Last year, when defending the tour against Live Golf, Monahan invoked the 9/11 terrorist attacks as a reason to stick with the tour. He has, of course, stepped away from day-to-day role to recover from a medical situation. So, from that we get this from the Golf Channel. Senators request Monahan, Al-Rumayyan, and Norman to attend July 11th hearing. Lawmakers have escalated their interest in the framework agreement between the PGA Tour and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, with Senators Richard Blumenthal and Ron Johnson scheduling a hearing on July 11th to review the deal. Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan, PIF Governor Yasir Al-Rumayyan, and Live Golf CEO Greg Norman have been requested to attend the hearing. To assist the subcommittee's review, please be prepared to discuss the circumstances and terms of the planned agreement between PGA Tour and the PIF, how any new entities formed through the planned agreement will be structured, the expected impact on PGA Tour and Live Golf players, and the anticipated role of the PIF in U.S. professional golf, the letter read. The agreement ended the ongoing legal battle between the Tour and the PIF, which owns 93% of Live Golf, and will create an entity that will include the for-profit assets of the Tour, Live Golf, and the DP World Tour. Al-Rumayyan will be chairman of the entity, tentatively dubbed NewCo internally, and Monahan will serve as CEO. Our goal is to uncover the facts about what went into the PGA Tour's deal with the Saudi Public Investment Fund and what the Saudi takeover means for the future of this cherished American institution and our national interest, said Blumenthal, the chairman of the Senate's Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. Americans deserve to know what the structure and governance of this new entity will be. Major actors in the deal are best positioned to provide this information, and they owe Congress and the American people answers in a public setting. According to Jody Balsam, a professor of clinical law at Brooklyn Law School, the request from Blumenthal and Johnson is not legally binding like a subpoena. Quote, but the optics strongly recommend that he does attend, unquote. The tour could also negotiate the time and place for Monahan to testify to accommodate his medical situation. The Justice Department expanded an ongoing review of the tour and possible antitrust concerns following the announcement of the framework agreement. A couple observations. Dickie Blumenthal might want to check his history. Golf isn't a beloved American institution. It was invented in Scotland. Only over there they call it golf. Ted Knight. Over there they call it golf.
Oh, it's true! It's damn true!
I'm curious about their requesting Greg Norman, who, by all accounts, was kept in the dark about this right up until the announcement of the deal. But if I had to guess, given Norman's penchant for siding with Big Left and being one to hold a grudge, Democrat senators want Norman to dump on the deal and give them every reason to try and block it. If the above happens, Vito may have a new hero, and I would still despise Greg Norman. Penny Hardaway is being spanked by the NCAA. It is typical NCAA legendary level hypocrisy. Evidently, he and an assistant, and then Hardaway later did an in-home visit with a recruit for the 2025 class. Recruits that far out you're only allowed to meet with them and contact them at their high school. You know damn well this happens at places like Duke, North Carolina, UCLA, Kentucky, Kansas. And those schools haven't faced any kind of punishment for decades now. But as the saying goes, the old saying, when an SEC school cheats, a mid-major school gets probation. Yeah. Meanwhile, in Paris, French police and other investigators raided the office of the 2024 Paris Olympic organizers' headquarters in an investigation into corruption involving next year's games. Corruption at the Olympics? Say it ain't so. They searched the headquarters Tuesday as part of a corruption investigation into contracts linked to the games, according to officials. The third straight time graft allegations have dogged a Summer Olympics. The Paris Organizing Committee said in a statement that a search was underway at their headquarters in the suburb of Saint-Denis. It's Saint-Denis to you and me. And said it was cooperating. It would not comment further. The search and other related raids were linked to two preliminary investigations related to the Olympics that had not previously been made public, according to an official with the Financial Prosecutor's Office, who was not authorized to be publicly named, according to office policy. One probe was opened in 2017, the year Paris was picked by the International Olympic Committee as the host. The other began last year. Corruption allegations have hung over this many times. Accusations surrounding how the games were awarded, how contracts for construction, sponsorship, team services, etc., how that's awarded. Accusations of vote buying linked to the 2016 Rio Olympics and the 2021 Tokyo Games led to the removal of several members of the IOC. Oh, yeah, those revived memories of ones surrounding the 2002 Salt Lake City Winter Games that led to reforms that limited IOC members' contact with candidate countries. So it did not entirely remove the scope for corruption. Yeah. It really boils down to this. Administrators make money siphoning off other people's money. I mean, it's really nothing more than that. They get kickbacks for awarding contracts. It's as old as the hills. It's been going on forever. It doesn't make it right, but it's been going on forever. The Vegas Golden Knights are your Stanley Cup champions. Now, you know how Canada thinks they should have permanent possession of the cup and that a U.S. team should never win it? Well, to Americans north of the Mason-Dixon line, the same type of sentiment exists there, too. No southern city, whether it's in the southeast or southwest, not to mention Texas, should even have a hockey team. Just like Canadian colleges shouldn't have football teams. And no American institution should ever have a curling team or a cricket team or, God forbid, any team or club that plays squash, badminton, or handball. And we got enough proles in this country without further breeding or encouragement. In the last of the feel-good sports stories, we have this from Stephen F. Austin University, as reported by the AP via ESPN and the New York Post. So a Stephen F. Austin University bowling assistant bowling coach is out after a relationship with a student athlete. An assistant women's bowling coach is out after the university discovered he had a relationship with a student athlete. Assistant Steve Lemke opted to resign rather than be fired after the school learned of the relationship, which also led to a split from his wife, who is the team's head coach. He's not working here anymore, Stephen F. Austin Athletic Director Ryan Ivey said. From a departmental standpoint, he had a choice, and he chose to resign. The 38-year-old Lemke, who was married to head coach Amber Lemke, helped coach the team to two national titles and two second-place finishes before resigning April 10th. The couple has since filed for divorce, according to court records. The newspaper did not identify the student-athlete involved, but reported that she was a member of the bowling team. Ivy said although the relationship was consensual, Lemke and the student violated the university's relationship rules. That's not all they violated. Steve Lemke said his wife learned of the relationship when she saw text messages from the woman on his phone. I knew it was kind of a no-no, but there's not a rule saying it can't happen. There's not a law saying I'm going to go to jail for doing something like this. There's nothing in stone. I guess it's just an ethics code, like we frown upon it, but there's no rule. There's no law broken. The student is no longer on the team after exhausting her eligibility. As soon as we found out, we went through the process, Ivy said. We support our student athletes and obviously Amber with what was going on. The team won NCAA titles in 2016 and 2019 and finished second in 2015 and last year. Amber Lemke has coached the team since the 2011-12 school year. Steve Lemke worked as a volunteer with the team until he was hired as an assistant in 2019. There's a little more from the New York Post, not a lot, but goes into some details, some further stuff with him. So, yeah, he said there's not a law prohibiting it. He said that the affair was discovered when Amber saw a text message from the student athlete on his phone. It didn't have anything in detail, Steve said of the text. It was just about how amazing I am, basically, in general perspective. Amber saw that and questioned me, and I got to the point where it just built up so much that I basically told her the truth after she dug through my phone. I was the stay-at-home dad for 5 years with the kids while Amber got to go off and coach the team. And when she'd get back, I'd run practices on top of taking care of the kids while she was back. When they'd travel again, I would sit back and take care of the kids. Then when I got hired on, she almost forced me to run practices. I was a volunteer the entire time before that trying to help out Amber. Once I got hired on, one thing stemmed from another. I felt like I was doing too much for what I was being valued at. Amber was hired, blah, blah, blah. Steve was a volunteer assistant until September 1st, 2019, when he was actually hired as an assistant coach. He reported to the Associate Athletic Director for Administration due to state nepotism laws. Amber will return as head coach, and the student athlete involved in the affair will not return to the team as she has no eligibility. As soon as we found out, we went through the process. Steve Lemke's bio is no longer on the SFA Athletics website. There are some pictures here. They had their first son in 2015 and their second in 2017. Yeah. Okay, so you got to see this guy. He's no prize catch. Look, I don't want to cast any aspersions, nor do I want to engage in too much stereotyping. But, like I said, I have a few questions. How does a husband get a job as his wife's assistant coach? That's depressing. Since this is bowling, I got to assume the student isn't going to be confused with Paige Spiranak anytime soon, or maybe I'm totally wrong. Speaking earlier of proles, why do our colleges actually compete in bowling? I mean, hey, look, kudos to Stephen F. Austin for being national champs in 2016 and 19 and runner-up in 2015 and 2022 and all, but actually competing in bowling? Okay, now to circle back on my point about my shallow take on the attraction factor, I looked at some various photos of the women's bowling team. While all of them do appear to be biological women, it still ain't saying much. I know, I get it. I'm a shallow, superficial, chauvinist pig. But these gals just ain't worth busting up a marriage, especially one with two kids involved, for a collegiate fling. And like I said, not that Mrs. Coach is any big bargain. She ain't a hottie. I'll leave it at that. All right, I won't. And that last point, I'll say two things. Yes, I seek attractiveness in a female. That's why I married my wife, who, if I say so myself, is pretty damn hot for any age, let alone now over 50. Yes, I married way above my expectation level, pay grade, whatever, so sue me. Look, I can't help it that Mrs. Hank felt well enough of me to spend our lives together. Okay, I can't help it. I can. Either way, I'm spoiled. I married up, I believe, is a hot woman, an actual biological sexy woman. There's no way I would throw that away because some college-aged girl on the woman's bowling team was available to take a hack at. Furthermore, this guy's attitude just sucks. He apparently sees nothing wrong with it. Worse, he plays the victim card. What the hell? He was basically handed a job. I'm not even sure what the hell he brought to the marriage before that. It can't have been much. That's for damn sure. Our almost final internet laughy, Taiwan kicking itself for not bribing the Bidens. That's a good one. Almost final internet laughy, Biden and Fetterman to speak at church on next day of definite. Definitely, this is the final laughy. Scientists who have no idea what's causing autism epidemic are also 100% sure it's not vaccines. Oh, God. Okay, getting ready to close out here. Gone on long enough. I'm losing my voice a little bit. Got some stuff to do. You know, it's Florida. There are storms. I see one coming on. And since my wife is still working, I know my doggie, my little mini Aussie, is going to get very nervous. She's good when she sits outside during a storm, doesn't freak out about the thunder, but inside for some reason. But anyway, I'm going to continue with our great guitarists who are no longer here series. I remember January I did Jeff Beck. February I did Tommy Bolin. March I did Terry Kath. April, which I took through May as well, I did George Harrison and John Lennon. And so for June, keeping in the group theme, I'm going to do the early guitarists of Fleetwood Mac, which would include Peter Green, Kerwin, Bob Weston, and Bob Welch. Now, few people realize Peter Green was actually the founder of the band. He'd had previous stints with John Mayall. Danny Kerwin, who was somewhat of a Peter Green protege, I guess you could say, he carried the guitar section from Peter Green's departure basically through the early Bob Welch years. He handed off to Bob Weston. That was before Lindsey Buckingham ended up joining. Bob Welch, of course, is best known for his vocals on Hypnotized and Sentimental Lady. He did the latter song as he re-recorded it when he went solo. So that's it. Starting next week, we're going to talk about, I'm going to devote less time to it each week. I'm just going to do a couple songs each week rather than do a whole feature. But the early guitarists of Fleetwood Mac with Peter Green, Danny Kerwin, Bob Welch, and Bob Weston. So it should be good stuff. You know, people think of Fleetwood Mac as just, you know, mainstream rock. And of course, they often are. But they were originally a rocking blues band. And did some great work. And they did some good stuff up to, you know, I wouldn't say present day because they're really not doing much in terms of recording, but you know, they did great stuff up into the, you know, the 90s, early 2000s, but they've had their issues and, of course, their deaths. Green is gone. Danny Kerwin, Wesson and Welch. Lindsey Buckingham was recently, well, within the last year or two, was booted from the band. So, gone through some changes and stuff. And then, of course, the loss of Christine McVie this year. Very sad. So that's what we will be talking next few weeks, about 15 minutes per show. We'll talk about that a little bit. Meantime, I'm going to send you out with a tribute, a John Lennon's tribute to Yoko Ono. It's called Woman. It's on the Double Fantasy album. It's a good song, though. I mean, like I said to Hawkeye Mike, I really think Double Fantasy, had Lennon not died when he did, Double Fantasy wouldn't have done as well as it ended up doing. And as he said, that's a lot of it had to do with the fact Yoko was on the album. But this song is a good song. It's called Woman. I love the guitar chording on this. Give it a listen.
For the other half of the sky.
Late great John Lennon with Woman off his Double Fantasy album. Funny, a couple of people jumped off the phones when I said I was going to close out with this, and then T. Boney jumps on the phone. So I'm going to mention it while he's here. Don't forget, July 15th, it's a Saturday, is Fort Dodge, Iowa, has their Shellebration concert this year featuring Collective Soul, supported by Pablo Cruz. And then they have a direct an opener, I guess you'd call it that. I forgot the terminology he's used. But be thinking about that. July 5th, Shellebration in Fort Dodge, Iowa. Should be a great time. A couple of really good bands. Collective Soul is a more, up-to-date band. I mean, they still record music. Pablo Cruz, a little longer ago. My era, I guess you'd say. But good stuff. Also, Joe Gibson, who's in the chat room right now, he tweeted out something really good the other day. The various talk show hosts on internet radio, I guess you'd say, have to really stick together more. We're not accomplishing much when we just do our shows and sort of go on about our business. We can implore people to listen to other shows, or we can implore people to write their congressperson or whatever. But, I mean, really, we face a real crisis in this country. Hunter Biden getting a plea deal. We still have a GOP that is can't get their act together. Lauren Boebert files this motion, and yet, she's on the Oversight Committee. Why would she do it? It's a good question. But the other question is, why is it taking so long? The Democrats were on President Trump days after they were on President Trump's ass before he ever took office. And meanwhile, Dopey Joe has just been able to slide and slide and slide. We've seen a media that has covered for him, as they did for his previous boss, Barack Obama. So it's true. We've got to all stick together. We've got to unite more than we are. And, it's listening to each other's shows. But it's also getting the word out, getting people to take action, because we can't sit around and wait for politicians to punish each other. It's sort of like, the way doctors very rarely will testify in malpractice cases. They just don't. It's like, the quid pro quo. People within an industry will rarely turn on others within the industry. And so that's what we have in Washington. We have congressmen and senators that just, Adam Schiff, he's going to defend himself on social media. Of course he is. But that doesn't mean that they should just sit back and say, we got to withdraw because, we want to keep our majority. What the hell? What good is a majority if you don't do anything with it or do anything about those on either side of the aisle who are misusing their office, abusing their office, not upholding the Constitution, not doing what the hell they were supposed to do when they got elected. It does us no good. It does us no good to talking about majorities. We've had majorities, and something happens. Somebody stepped, John McCain with Obamacare would be the prime example. Romney and Liz Cheney and others that supported the impeachment of President Trump. It's just, if we don't all unite as hosts and as people, this is going to keep going south. It really is. And it's very sad because the principles on which this country was founded are amazing. Absolutely amazing. It's an amazing experiment, and it's no longer an experiment. But not only that, it's being trampled now, and there's no legitimate reason for it to be trampled. Said my piece. I am out. I am going to try and do a hankerings tomorrow around 1 o'clock Eastern time. In the meantime, folks, be safe. Have a great rest of your week. Have a great weekend. And you know what? Like I said before, contact your congressman when things are happening. You know, we're not hearing anything about the First Republic Bank. They're sort of just going about their business. We're not hearing anything really about the debt ceiling. Those kinds of things. So, yeah, let's start holding people's feet to the fire. Have a good night. Have a great rest of your week. Have a fun weekend. Be safe. And, of course, as always, God bless America. God bless this great country. Good night, folks.
Bye-bye.